The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Law enforcement now says the 28-year-old woman had drawn a detailed map of the school and conducted surveillance before killing three students and three adults. The suspect who was killed by police is also believed to be a former student at the private school. Nashville Police Chief John Drake says the suspect, who was female and identified as transgender, left behind a manifesto.
No, we have a manifesto. We have some writings that we're going over that pertain to this day, the actual incident. We have a map drawn out of how this was all going to take place. There's right now a theory that we may be able to talk about later, but it's not confirmed.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, just so tragic. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. Maggie and I were just talking about how sad this story of the shooting in the Covenant School in Nashville was. Left three students and three staff members dead. Of course, causing all kinds of grief for their families and for the surviving students and teachers. And what happened was horrific. Maggie, you said the pastor of the... Oh, wow. Maggie's flipped the screen. I wish there was a camera in here so you could see. That is a beautiful family. Wow, look at that. A family of six. Look at that little girl. That little girl was shot. Open your mic. Fill everyone else in what happened.
I just retweeted this photo, the photo of the Scruggs. Haley Scruggs was killed in this shooting. She was the daughter of one of the Covenant Presbyterian Church pastors named Chad. Yep. And this family is just...
It's beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Absolutely beautiful family.
And it's the littlest one that was taken from them.
And that's their only girl, right?
Only girl.
Yeah, the other three boys are there. They're all young. How old was she? She looks little.
8, 9, something
that's
like
so
that.
Sad. Yeah, boy, what a test for that pastor, though, huh? What I often think about it, you know, you can preach it, right? You can talk the talk, but boy, can you walk the walk? And I'm not saying that to him. I pray to God I'm never put to the test. I believe I'm a person of deep faith, but, you know, the challenges of life sometimes can really shake you. We need to pray for that family. We need to pray for all those going through crisis. It's just so sad. It's a weird story, too, because the shooter was a girl who identified as a male. And that's only making things worse. There's a radical transgender group called Trans Resistance Network. And they're making Aubrey Hale out to be the victim. They claim that Aubrey felt that I never know what word to use. I guess I'll go by his biology, right? He felt there was no other way, no other effective way to be seen than to lash out by taking the life of others and by consequence himself. And the group of that's what this group is claiming. They're claiming Aubrey felt that way. The group of calls used pronouns Aubrey identified with rather than one that really described her. The Trans Resistance Network position is hate has consequences. That's what they say. So I just want to pray for the repose of the souls of those who were killed, including Aubrey Hale. Clearly a tortured individual, and it's so sad. Way too much. We've had 139, something like that, mass shootings already. We're only into at the end of the third month of this year. And a mass shooting, of course, is defined by, a shooting that involves, four or more people getting injured or killed. Really, it's sad. And so let's pray for enlightenment, conversion of heart. Those struggling with the confusion of gender dysphoria, I mean, we really, this is an attack on the family. I feel like I open the show and we talk about this all the time. And really, we see the evil one at work here. I think he's becoming super, super aggressive. I was reading an article a little bit earlier. Maybe I can get to it later. We're going to talk about marriage a little bit later in the show. Maybe your marriage is in trouble. But I saw an article on dining together. Let me see if I can pull that up very quickly here. And it was really quite revealing because it ties into, I think, the crisis that we're seeing here with these mass shootings and with so many other problems. There's some data out that talks about how there's this epidemic of loneliness in the world today, right? And I don't deny that at all. I know a lot of young kids who are lonely. I know a lot of older adults who are lonely. But the article I saw, and maybe we'll talk about it a little bit later in the show. I don't want to give too much away now. We've got a lot to get into, but the American College of pediatricians, they said that over the past three decades, family time at the dinner table and family conversation in general has declined by more than 30%. And what was interesting about this, they say, hey, look, there's a link to unwanted pregnancies, to depression, to obesity, to lower academic performance, to smaller vocabularies, to reduced literary skills. It goes on and on with the disappearance of the family meal. I don't know. Do you have your family meal together? My wife and I made sure we did with our children every night, right? And I was lucky my wife had the opportunity to stay home. But when two parents work, sometimes they can't do it, right? Sometimes you've got a broken relationship. It's hard. Sometimes the TV's on or the phone is at the table, the tablet's going. That's a no-no in the Mariani household. No way. But we're seeing it all across America. And here's the thing that struck me. And again, I didn't plan on talking about this. But it said that, you know, with the breakdown of the family meal, there's a breakdown then of stronger family ties. And that results in a breakdown in friendships, in churches, in business. A whole litany of other things. If you want to build safer communities, you need stronger family. And it says, if our nation loses the family dinner, its people will slowly forget greater festivities like Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners, right? And I think that's true. What will happen with occasions like the 4th of July picnic? And then it says, losing the family meal not only will hurt religion, but then it will, in essence, hurt society at large. And that's really what we're seeing. We're seeing this ripple effect. We're seeing it. I won't dive too deeply into my time. I'd like to share more of that with you because I really do think that that is so critical. We're seeing an attack on the family, and that's why we're seeing such dysfunction, such disorientation with the next generation. We're letting the schools raise our kids, and you see how crazy the educational system can be in terms of their indoctrination. So you know what? It comes back to us the way God created it. You know, we share in that creative process, and we are primary educators of our children. So let's pray that these school shootings end. Let's pray for safety. Let's pray for broken relationships and family. Chuck Neff will be stopping by a little bit later. So will Doug Hinderer. We'll take a look at this crisis of loneliness, this crisis of marriage in our country, and how you remedy that. Maybe you want your marriage saved. Maybe your own marriage has grown cold right now. Maybe it's grown tepid. Maybe you're drawn apart. You know, maybe you just can't heal from the wounds that have occurred. We'll get into all that a little bit later today. on another note, I saw this, this Bishop Rolando Alvarez, we've talked about him in the past. He's the bishop that's under house arrest thanks to Nicaraguan dictator Daniel Ortega. He received a visit from his brother and sister in prison on Saturday and asked how he was doing. And I was struck by this line. I thought it was kind of cool. He says, well, thanks be to God, I'm well. With a lot of inner strength, a lot of peace in the Lord and the Most High Virgin. He said, I want to thank God for the very tasty food here with the little meal that our friends from the penitentiary system graciously and kindly provide us. I'm like, you know, that's a great way of looking at it. I am sure it's absolute slop, right? I mean, what the heck are they going to serve you in a Nicaraguan prison, right? And Maggie was telling me she saw a picture of him. He's losing some weight, you know? No question about that. I mean, you're not getting you're not getting those healthy, robust meals you might get on the outside. But you know, he's not looking at this and complaining. And it resonated with me. I don't know, because I had this conversation last night with some friends. You know, I'm looking around at how blessed I am, and yet there's still an opportunity to complain about something, right? Right? I mean, really, I mean, think about it. Think about all the comforts you have, and yet, oh, the house isn't big enough. Oh, the heater's, you know, too cold, or it's too hot in here, or whatever. You're complaining about things that other people would just love to have, right? They would just love to have it. This bishop's in prison. He could have been facetious, but I think, you know, from a spiritual perspective, he thanked God even for the food that he gave. And he was very gracious to his captors. And it reminds me of those prison videos of the American prisoners of war in these communist prison camps. And that's probably about right. I mean, he's living in a very difficult situation, yet with great love and dignity has accepted his cross. It was lesson to me. We should do the same thing, right? Do the same thing. No matter where you are, what you're going through, pick up that particular cross. Don't complain today. Offer it up and say a prayer for that imprisoned bishop, unfortunately, down in Nicaragua. I want to talk school choice, if we could, for just a moment here, too. I don't know if you saw this story or not. We reached out to the Florida governor. We'd like to get him to join us here on the program. The Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, signed a law. He signed into law a bill that gives parents the rights to send their children to whatever school the parent sees as best for their children in the state. And you know what I like about this? This is putting the child first and the educational system second, right? You can put the money with the family. Let them make what decision is best for the child. It's a universal school choice law, and it's considered the most liberal, and I mean that in the best sense of the word in terms of liberal, liberal meaning free, school choice law in the country. And on top of that, parents are going to be given the money that would normally go to the public schools. And they can decide. They can make the decision. They can use that money for whatever education they want for the children. If it's tutoring, if it's a different school, or what, I think it's fantastic. So DeSantis signed the bill at Christopher Columbus High School in Miami. That's an all-boys school. It's run by the Marist Brothers. And after he signed it, he said this, and I'll quote him. He said, quote, "Now, primarily, there will be a preference for low- and middle-income families, but at the end of the day, we fundamentally believe the money should follow the student and be directed on what the parents think is most appropriate education for their child." Now, there are other states considering similar bills, and Iowa and Texas, I think, are two of the others that are also going to see probably how this plays out. But I'm joined right now by Michael Barrett. He's associate for the education at Florida Catholic Conference, and he joins us today for some perspective on what this portends for the future of education in Florida. Hey, Michael, thanks for making time for us. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew. Thanks a lot. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, I'm delighted to have you here. This must be exciting for you to see happen. Not everybody follows this. A lot of people have kids out of school. They might not understand what this means or portends for the rest of the country as well. But maybe explain what this will empower parents with, how it can change education as we know it, and what the new law will allow.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, we're really excited and really grateful to Governor DeSantis for signing the bill, and also really grateful to Speaker of the House Paul Renner for making this a legislative priority, his top legislative priority, and as well as the bill sponsors, Representative Kaley Tuck and Senator Corey Simon and the Senate President Kathleen Casadelmo. It's a transformational bill. Florida's been on the cutting edge of school choice for, the last 20 years, probably. We've had a very expansive school choice program that's been a great blessing to parents in our state. And this bill really kind of takes it all the way and gives parents the educational freedom to choose the best school environment for their child, whether that's private school or home school, charter school, public school. Kind of changes the educational paradigm in Florida in terms of giving parents the power to direct the education of their children.
Wow, that's parents then can use this money to send their child to whatever school they want, right? Even if it's parochial.
Yes. So basically what this bill does is it changes the scholarship programs that were in place. It changes them to educational savings accounts. And what that means is parents are given a scholarship. It's usually about $7,000 or $8,000 a year per family. If you qualify based on a disability, then it's usually more depending on the severity of the disability. But what it does is that money goes to the family, and then the family can use that for a whole host of what are called allowable uses of the funds. So that can be private school tuition, but it can also be curriculum.
Yep. That's great.
Kind of other ancillary educational uses as well.
So Michael, I'm curious as to what this means for the rest of the country. I'm glad DeSantis is doing this. I think it's Iowa and Texas are considering it as well. Do you think this will change the level of education? We know that a lot of our kids are falling behind academically in the country right now. And I think I'd seen this can be used for tutoring. It'd be used for all sorts of things to help your student achieve success. You think we're at the advent of some sort of reformation in education in this country?
I think it's possible. I think, during the pandemic, with a lot of people going remote, there's kind of a move towards customizing education, you know, in terms of, you know, you saw homeschooling grow, you saw hybrid schools grow and things like that. And I think that you also saw parents who wanted to kind of take more control over what their students were learning in school and things like that. And so I think it definitely could. It's funny. It's so new. I mean, there's only, you know, Arizona, Utah, and Iowa are the only other states that have done this, and they've just done it in the past year. And so I think it'll be interesting to see as we go forward what the broad effects of this are. But I think it's a great opportunity for the country and especially for Catholic education.
Amen to that. I'm excited about it. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like a good Catholic education. My gripe has always been it's too expensive. I mean, a lot of parents can't afford it. I went through 12 years of Catholic school, so I loved it and sent my kids to it. I think it's I'm a big champion of it. So I'm hoping this will make it more possible for people.
Yeah, so. Well, in Florida, it's, you know, the scholarship, especially in grade school, for the most part, the $7,000 or $8,000 a year will cover almost the entire cost of Catholic school. Wow. High school is a little bit more, but it's covering a lot of the cost of high school as well.
Right.
So it's really, really helped our enrollment here in Florida and really been a huge blessing to our Catholic schools for sure.
Well, keep up your good work. I'm grateful for the time you gave us today, Michael. Appreciate your effort and your insight there. Michael Barrett is the Associate for Education at the Florida Catholic Conference, and we'll continue to follow the story. We'll have you back again. Michael, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Drew. Appreciate it.
That's a great one. You got it. Yeah, big news coming out of Florida. We'll follow it. We'll see what other states do. I think this is great. I know a lot of people are concerned about the strings that might come attached with the money, but these are taxpayer dollars. So, you know, can the state, you know, maybe under a future less friendly, you know, administration cause problems for Catholics? I hope not. I don't think so. I think that this really may help, you know, parents now who are frustrated with drag shows and the indoctrination of their kids when they're in fourth grade with things that they should never be exposed to, having a choice to say, enough's enough. I can't homeschool, but thanks to this money, I can now take my kids somewhere else. But, you know, a tangential story I heard this morning. This is weird, too. And I, my apologies to any professor and to any educator that's out there, because I never liked the broad brush. You know, when you talk about bad police officers or bad doctors or bad teachers, you know, it's not fair because I bad priests, people say, you know, 95, 96, 97, 98% of them are great, noble people who really fulfill their vocation. But you do have a couple bad apples every once in a while. There was here in the States an English professor at Wayne State University. It's in Detroit. He's been suspended because of a tweet he sent out. And normally in this situation, in today's world, you might think that the professor was conservative. He had to be suspended. What did he say, right? He tweeted out something sane and logical, right? Got to get rid of those guys. You can't have them in the higher levels of academia. Well, that's not the case. This guy's name is Steve Shaviro, I think. S-H-A-V-I-R-O, Shaviro. He criticized students like the ones at Stanford Law who shout down these conservative speakers, right? The problem is that it only encourages them, he says, to feel that they're going to be persecuted for righteousness. Instead, this is what he said, there's a better solution. This guy's crazy. Listen to this. He said, kill them. That's what he said. He said this in a tweet. Kill them. He said, and I want to quote him, quote, I think it's far more admirable to kill, end of quote. Fortunately, the school took that down very quickly and they suspended him. But what is this Yahoo doing teaching, right? How do we get such absolute craziness in our schools? And some people argue against tenure. That's a whole nother conversation. But I think that's it's wild that some of these professors, they can come in, especially that director of diversity, equity, and inclusion, who would not allow, you know, any opposition in terms of thought or exchange. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. These halls of higher academia today. You need to know, look, that's why Catholic education, that's why homeschooling, that's why charter education, whatever it is, you need to have your kids well-formed in the beginning. So when they go into these higher levels of education, so often kids lose a faith, so often they get indoctrinated, right? Well, if they're well-formed, they can at least know when they're being poisoned. And that's what happens. We also need to have good educators. And I say that about medicine. I say that about law. I say that about Hollywood. I say it about a lot of different fields. We need to take the culture back by not just infiltrating it, but by becoming part of it. We need to be those professors that are out there. If you can send your kids to a good, well-formed Catholic school, then go ahead and do that. University of Dallas, Franciscan U, you know, the Monsignor Shays University. You check him out at comethemary.com. I'm zoning out, Maggie, on that university. It's Monsignor Shays, you know it. Comethemary.com, University of Mary. I had a total mental block on that. So you go, you know, check out those universities, you know, and check out good Catholic schools. They do make a difference. They do make a difference. What's interesting, too, is I saw that story this morning. I thought, how did this guy ever get to teach? This comes not too long after Jane Fonda. Remember Fonda? Yeah, and again, the word murder is what, or kill, is what made this trigger in my mind. Jane Fonda went on The View, and she told the women there that the solution for those who oppose abortion, she said, is murder. Murder. Now, she claimed that, you're just kidding. She doesn't mean that. You know, the View ladies came around her. She's just kidding. After that, she said she was joking, but if you look at the tape, it doesn't look like she was, right? Any more than I think this professor was being facetious. I think they mean what they say. And I think sometimes it just slips out. But let's pray for them. Final story here for you, and we'll change gears. We got a lot to get into. In fact, coming up in a moment, and this could be a concern if you're pregnant or if your kids are pregnant, right? The CDC says that 1 in 36 children now are being identified with autism spectral disorder. When I started my network position here at Relevant back in 2004, I think the number I saw was 1 in 167 or 1 in 150. And every time I covered the story, it got smaller and smaller. It got down to 110, got down to 70, got down to 67. Now 1 in 36 kids? Wild. We'll look at that coming up in a moment. But maybe a little bit of a different story I've been following. Beethoven, do you like his music? I don't know if you know this. Beethoven suffered from hearing loss, suffered towards the end of his life. In fact, at the premiere of his Ninth Symphony, also called the Choral Symphony, he kept conducting because he was actually conducting from memory. And he actually couldn't hear that the orchestra and the chorus were done. So scientists have recently done DNA analysis on his hair. And they found that the hearing loss was not a genetic issue, nor were his, he apparently had stomach problems too. They weren't genetic either. Some believe his liver problems were the result of genetic issues, and those were spurred on by lingering hepatitis B infections. But, you know, I love the way science today can unlock literally the mysteries of the past. Whoever thought you'd be able to medically analyze one of the greatest composers of all time, Beethoven, right? DNA unlocks a lot of mysteries, also solves a lot of crimes. Got to take a short break. Okay, when we come back, we'll talk more. If you have somebody you love, thinking about having a child, or if you know you are dealing with a child with autism, love to hear about that too as well. Autism diagnoses among younger children, believe it or not, they dropped during the pandemic. And Dr. Gerard Nadal is going to be joining me. I don't know why that was. Is it because less kids are being diagnosed, not going to the doctors? But when you have the Center for Disease and Control, the CDC saying 1 in 36 children now have been identified with autism spectrum disorder. Those are startling numbers. We'll look at why when I return.
Your news, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The truth.
Thanks, Drew. Always a quest for the truth.
Now.
And it just reinforced why I love Relevant Radio, because you guys got the truth.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It is it's a delight to be here with you. I'm very grateful to be able to spend my afternoon with you. And I've been tracking for years now a trend, and look, I'm not the expert on this, but it seems that autism diagnosis is among younger children is now 1 in 36. I remember when I was reporting on this initially, this is years ago, 1 in, I don't know, 167, 1 in 150, it was way up there. It seems like every year I go back and I look at these numbers and they continue to go down. The CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, they issued a new report last week on autism, and the trend does not look good. And that's why I thought maybe we can talk about this. Maybe you've been diagnosed with it. Maybe you're thinking about having children. In 2018, when they issued their last report, that's the last time I saw this, the number of 8-year-old children diagnosed with autism was 1 in 44. So the new report now says 1 in 36, and 8-year-olds being diagnosed with this disorder. But there was an interesting phenomena that happened in March of 2020. The number of children that were diagnosed, it was going up, not down, until March, when it suddenly dropped like a balloon. And the reason for that, of course, is the shutdown from COVID-19. People stopped going to the doctors, I'm assuming, unless it was related to COVID. But that's going to mean that these kids, you know, maybe they're not getting their needs met. I don't know. Was there a reason other than COVID that those numbers changed? Autism has no clear cause. That's what's so curious. There's no cure for it either, especially since there's a spectrum of behaviors and conditions that are considered to be autistic. But the best medical science can do right now is help the autistic kid adapt to their conditions with a number of different tools and devices and help parents understand what their kids are going through. So if you are going through this, I'll tell you what, I'm going to open the phones. You can join us with your questions, your concerns, maybe what you're experiencing or what you saw. Dr. Gerard Nadal is going to be joining me. He is a molecular biologist and a microbiologist who is also the president of the Abortion Breast Cancer Coalition, and he's led autism research projects. Number here to get in is 888-914-9149. Feel free to join us. Doctor, good to have you with me today. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Great to be here.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting your take on this. A couple things. One, the trend that we are continuing to see, where the number of kids seems to be increasing, and so we're down to 1 in 36 births now, kids diagnosed with this. And yet during COVID, it disappeared. Lay it out for me. I mean, maybe you can explain. I'm not sure, you know, what those numbers mean. You know, why are we continuing to see this? Is it a greater diagnosis? Is there something driving the rate of autism? And what can you share?
Sure. Well, yeah, there's a lot going on with this. And I think you led off with a really good analysis here when you were saying years ago, when you started tracking this, it was 1 in 150. You know, back in 2002, the rate was 1 out of 150 children. If you go up to 2006, it was 1 out of 110. Go to 2018, it's 1 in 44. Now it's 1 in 36.
Yeah.
So a few things are happening here. Black and Hispanic communities were not as well sampled as, you know, for testing as they are in recent years. That kind of lagged behind a bit. Mm. So it seemed that autism was influencing white children. It was impacting white children a lot more than communities of color until people began to look in and see, well, there wasn't as much testing being done in communities of color. So now we're seeing that the rate of autism reporting is higher in Black and Hispanic communities than it is in the Caucasian community. But I should, you know, caution people to understand that we're not talking about the overall prevalence. We're talking about the rate of new diagnoses. So clearly, if you have a larger untapped community and now you're starting to do more testing, you would expect to see that rate go up, at least transiently.
Yeah.
As far as what happened in 2020, yeah, you're right. You know, with all of the shutdowns, everything got shut down. I mean, you know, one of the lowest priorities really was doing educational testing, and you couldn't do that anyway because the schools were all closed. You know, hospitals had shut down elective procedures for close to a year, you know, as they had, took over a lot of units for COVID wards. So I think what we're going to see is transiently, you're going to see a dip in the number of new cases, what we call the incidence, right? So while the incidence of autism will, you know, kind of dip down, you know, in 2020, 2021, I think you're going to see a rebound in, you know, you'll see actually a much higher rate in the 2022-2023 data, you know, but the prevalence, you know, I think will remain the same, if not, you know, actually increase. As you see, we've gone from 1 in 44 to 1 in 36. So I think we're going to make up for, you know, lost time with doing testing on kids during the pandemic.
Yeah, you know, there's some that say that, well, maybe we're seeing the increase just because of better diagnostics. I mean, the CDC, that's one of the claims they make, and it makes me think of the overdiagnoses of tonsillitis back in the 70s or ear tube infections in the 80s. So no matter what the symptoms was, here was a diagnosis. Is there a blanket diagnosis thrown on certain things? And then in addition to that, if that's not the case, is there something in the environment maybe causing this spike?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's a little bit of everything going on here. You know, you and I have talked before. You know, my oldest child was diagnosed on the autism spectrum back in 2004. Yeah. So this has kind of been the air that we breathe at my house. And he's doing fantastic now. He's a, you know, 23-year-old. He made Eagle Scout and the Boy Scouts. He's a straight-A student in college in accounting and finance. And he grew from one end of the spectrum clear off the other.
Wow.
So with a lot of hard work, you know, he made it from one end of the spectrum to the other. So I think that's the good news for a lot of parents of children on the spectrum is this is not a life sentence. You know, people need to understand that. I do think, though, that we're seeing something going on because there just weren't that many kids who couldn't communicate when we were young.
Yeah, right. I agree.
You know, I mean, it just wasn't there. I mean, it's so there's a lot of it today. Is there something environmental? Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rule that out at all. People have, I know we need to cover, you know, the vaccines, if you don't mind for a minute.
No, sure, go ahead.
Back around, maybe it was 1998 or something, Andrew Wakefield and his research team in England published an article in the British journal Lancet, which is one of the most prestigious journals in the world. Blaming the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine on the increase in autism rates. And subsequent investigation found that Wakefield and his associates committed such egregious acts of misbehavior in that article that the Lancet took the unusual step of retracting the entire paper. You know, the MMR, and they said at the time that the preservative that's used in vaccines called thimerosal, which is a form of mercury, they believed that was to blame. But by 2003, the thimerosal was removed from all childhood vaccines. And as you can tell, I mean, from 2003, you know, right around, we went from 1 in 150 to 1 in 36 today, and that's without mercury in the vaccine. Okay, so from that perspective, right, the MMR vaccine and the mercury issue are not causal agents. I think the jury is still out on the issue of these multivalent administrations. You know, you take the two-week-old baby to the pediatrician and they give them seven different diseases in one visit.
Right, exactly.
And I mean, personally, as a medical microbiologist, I've always had a suspicion that maybe we're stimulating that immature immune system a little too aggressively, and we may have an awful lot of these cytokines that white blood cells produce crossing the blood-brain barrier, and who knows what's going on here. I've heard a lot of mothers say, oh, I don't think those vaccines are bad. I had my daughter vaccinated, and she slept for 15 hours. And I'm thinking, oh, no.
Yeah, right.
That's a problem. You know, because white blood cells will secrete these cytokines that go and stimulate fever. Yeah. Other cytokines will go into the brain and induce malaise when we're sick. You know, we all know that feeling of malaise.
Sure.
So what's going on with an immature brain? I don't know. But a lot of this, you know, a lot of this seems to be happening, you know, with, you know, right around the time. It really picked up pace right around the time that we started doing a lot of these multivalent shots. So I'm wondering if maybe spreading the shots out a little bit might not be better.
Yeah, it sounds like a great theory. I mean, there's got to be a reason we're seeing now 1 in 36. You're right. In 2004, when I was broadcasting my first year at this network, it was 1 in 150. So there's got to be something behind this other than just better diagnosis. Let's take a few calls for you, too. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149, taking a look at a new study coming from the CDC. They're calling it a national crisis. 1 in 36 children now identified with autism spectrum disorder. Lydia is in Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Lydia, you're on the air with Dr. Gerard Nadal. Good afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering if this study, if the CDC was only taking medical diagnoses or taking medical and educational diagnoses. And the reason I'm asking is I have a 7-year-old son. He has a specific language impairment.
Right.
And we spent a lot of time and money taking him places to make sure that, you know, he was getting the help he needed. And they all in the medical field came to the conclusion he was not autistic. However, I've kind of been, you know, fighting with the schools ever since he was in early ed, because they seem to really want to push the autism diagnosis on him. And right. As of right now, they won't accommodate what mm-hmm. his actual issue is. He's been labeled autistic, and he will get those services corresponding with autism. So I'm just wondering if, like, you know, there's kind of a bit of a, you know, trigger happy type of a thing in giving this diagnosis. Like, is autism the new ADHD of, you know, what the 80s and 90s were? So I was just wondering if, you know, if they're taking both of those into effect, because, like I said, I have son who's got a medical diagnosis that's different from the educational one.
Great question, Lydia. Great call. Doctor, I'll let you respond.
Yeah, Lydia, great question indeed. So to address the initial question, where do these diagnoses come from? How does CDC gather them? You can go to Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Reports for the CDC. And they have, you know, a number of good papers on this. So there's actually a network of sites across the country that the CDC uses, a representative network. So they have them in Arizona, Arkansas, California, Georgia, Maryland, Minnesota, Missouri, New Jersey, Tennessee, Utah, and Wisconsin. And they have, each site has selected geographic areas of the state that they monitor. And they take in information from anybody that will use these billable diagnostic codes. So it might be medical offices, could be school systems. There's a number of different sites that all report into these surveillance sites, and then the surveillance sites kick it up to the CDC, and then it's all compiled. So that's where that's coming from.
All right. Well, Lydia, thank you. Doctor, I need to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll grab a few more calls of your own hold. I'll get you on the air. Our number, if you want to get in, 888-914-9149, taking a look at the rise of autism in our country, what might be causing it. Our guest today, Dr. Gerard Nadal. And we're back with more right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
We're about 10, 15 minutes away from the Chaplet. Love to pray with you and for you. Tell one other person too, okay? Have them join you as well. We'll pray together. If you are just joining me, there is new research published in the journal Autism Research, and they're finding that the diagnosis of autism spectral disorder among younger children in our country decreased during the pandemic. But they also looked at data, and what they have found is that the number of kids diagnosed with it overall is now about 1 in 36. So if you have a child, or you're pregnant, or you're thinking about having children, or maybe your grandkids are having them, your nieces and nephews, turn up the radio. I've invited Dr. Gerard Nadal to join us today. He had a child with autism, and he's got a success story, and he'll share that. There are resources out there for you as well. And if you've got a call or question, feel free to join us. We're just looking at why more and more children are now being diagnosed with this, and what might be driving it? Is it something in the environment? People have raised questions about vaccines. Could it be fluoride or chlorine? Could it be something else? Is it just more of a diagnosis? Doctor, let's go right back to the phones. Teresa in Covina, California has got a question for you. Hi, Teresa.
Yes, my question is, have they checked on the chlorine? And I'll use as an example, my nephew, who is a doctor of physics, has a slight touch of autism, and they discovered that when their son had autism, who is now a college, you know, university graduate and going to be in business. So it isn't a death sentence. But anyway, in their city where they live, they added chlorine, and I don't know how many years ago. So maybe you could let us know about that. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you, Teresa.
Teresa, thank you. In everything that I've looked at, I haven't seen anything that's shown a positive correlation between chlorine and autism. A lot of places have been chlorinating their water for quite a long time before, you know, these, the rates began to rise. So if it plays a role, I haven't seen the data for it yet.
You think there's something that women are ingesting? The rise of estrogen or estrogen mimickers? Is it, some sort of chemical in the cosmetics? Could it be something when that child was in utero that is affecting the development of that child?
Could very well be. I mean, we have a lot of estrogenic compounds that are in the water. We know, for instance, that there's so much birth control, you know, that gets excreted unchanged in the urine that several environmental journals have shown that the fish in coastal waters are being negatively impacted. The male fish aren't developing fully. And so you're getting what's called intersexing of fish, and it's collapsing entire fisheries. And, you know, these data are 25 years old. So, and then, you know, where do we get this rise in, you know, young people with gender dysphoria from? You know, could it be all the estrogenic compounds in the drinking water that people are taking that maybe are negatively impacting, you know, or in some way impacting brain development?
Right.
I think it could be. I don't think we can rule that out yet.
It's fascinating stuff. Dave is in Phoenix, Arizona, and he wants to join the conversation as well. Dave, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with Dr. Gerard Needell. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Drew. A few years ago, I heard it was an immunologist, Teresa Deschler. She had discovered her son had gotten autism, and she was found a correlation between when we'd go in and vaccinate people in Africa, a low rising lymphoma and autism. And her conjecture was it was the embryonic vaccines developed from human embryonic cells because the DNA intermixed with the young children. Whereas animal cell line vaccines were safe. If they were derived from animal cells, it would be, the DNA is different enough, it didn't affect them. And she sort of fell off the radar, and I think a lot of it was like this, what happened with COVID, you know, there was no studies and all this stuff, but it makes a lot of sense to me. I don't know if you've heard anything more about that or not.
Yeah, and Dave, you said it was Teresa Deschler, is that who you're talking about?
Teresa Deschler, yeah, she was either on Immaculate Heart Radio or Relevant.
Yeah, no, she's been on the show in the past, and Dr. Nadal, I think you know her, don't you?
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Maybe you can respond to Dave then.
Sure, Dave. I have enormous respect for Dr. Deischer. She worked for years in high-level positions in the vaccine industry before she went into doing her own research. So, and if I'm not mistaken, I think she did her PhD at Stanford University. So, you know, she's, you know, intellectually, she's as on the ball as they get. I've looked at her work, and her thoughts were, if we use human embryonic stem cells, when you break them open, when you grow viruses inside the cell, we know that there's a certain amount of DNA contamination from those cells that gets in with the viruses. The question is, when we inject that into a baby, does that DNA make its way up to the brain and then insert itself into, you know, nerve cells in the brain, creating little short circuits? It's, I think, a good working hypothesis. I haven't seen the latest in her research where maybe she shows a mechanism that would prove that to be the case. So I think the jury's still out on that working hypothesis. But listen, Teresa is just as, you know, bright and sharp as they come. Yeah. So I think we need to keep an eye on that.
Hey, Dave, thank you. That was a good call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Good question. We'll move along. Jim is in Minnesota. Doctor, he's got a question for you. Hi, Jim.
Hi. A few years ago, I don't know, 8-10 years ago, I read an article where this mother, her son had autism. So I don't know what she did or what food, but she completely changed his diet and brought him out of it. Wow. I don't know if there's anything to that, food preservatives or whatever.
Wow, fascinating. Doctor, how did you do it? Jim, thank you for that call. What about diet? It goes back to the caller who called in about chlorine and other things. I've had physicians on talking about your gut biome and how that can change everything from depression to mental health to obesity to a whole litany of things. Is it possible that diet can help somebody who may be diagnosed with this, you know, improve or come out of it?
I've seen a lot of claims to support that. Where this comes from is a fellow by the name of Dr. Bernard Rimland, who had his own child with autism. And he was responding to Bruno Bettelheim's refrigerator mommy hypothesis that kids with autism come from non-responsive mothers, stuff like that. And Bernie Rimland took a physiological approach, and he saw that in some kids, they're missing key enzymes in the intestine, as well as having intestinal dysplasia, so that when they break down certain carbohydrates, they get these little fragments that more resemble, and proteins, they get these little fragments that resemble opioid compounds. And, you know, so he went with, a whole dietary regimen. It was called the Defeat Autism Now diet, or the DAN diet. So if people want to look up Bernard Rimland and the DAN diet, you know, they can see this in great detail.
All right, great question. Thank you. We'll go to Florida next. Pachi is calling us from there. Hi, Pachi.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, well, thanks for calling.
Awesome. Just a little bit of information. I was listening to the radio maybe like 3 days ago, 4 days ago, and there is a huge lawsuit out against Tylenol because women who ingested Tylenol while they were pregnant actually had a higher chance of their babies being born with autism. I don't know if that's 100% true. I just know there is a lawsuit out against Tylenol, as well as ramen noodles, any of those fast ramen noodles. Ramen noodles actually mess with the balance of estrogen, especially in women. So what kind of effects could that have on the child? I mean, I'm not too sure, but it was just something I figured maybe it would be good information to know out there and just kind of cautious.
I appreciate it. Let me let Dr. Nadal respond. Dr. I've got a couple minutes, and maybe you can offer some advice, too, for people who need help, who are battling autism as well.
Sure, absolutely. First, to Pachi's point, I'm not familiar with data on either one of those, but I've written that down, so I'll be taking a look at that, okay? So maybe next time we can talk about it, we'll put that out there. Okay, I'd like to leave people with a little bit of resource material, if I can. The rapid rise in the prevalence rate of autism has really led to a shortage of available therapists. You know, when you go from 1 in 150 to 1 in 36, it really strains resources. So Autism Speaks, it's a great organization, got together with the World Health Organization, and they developed a caregiver's skill training, okay? So it's the caregiver skills training. If you go to Autism Speaks, their website, autismspeaks.org, you can see all the information on the caregiver skills training. What they do is they train caregivers of children with autism how to do everyday play, give them home routines to build communication, engagement, behavior, living skills. There's no cost to families. That's the great thing. There's no cost to families. They have small groups of caregivers will get together with a group leader. They do home visits. So if you go there and take a look at that, it's great benefit to the children and to the caregivers.
Doctor, I got to leave it right there because I'm up against the clock. Thank you very much for your time and for your expertise.
Drew,
we'll talk again soon, okay? Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
It's Dr. Gerard Nadal. Check him out. Let's pray for him, too. The chaplain is straight ahead. Stay with me.